This podcast is brought to you in part by Bangor Savings Bank. Bangor Savings Bank celebrates local every day. It's where we live, work, and play. Bangor Savings knows local is a little bit different for everyone. It's the region, the people, the businesses, and the sense of community that makes your local so unique. And Bangor Savings Bank supports your local by partnering with people and communities in support of that wonderfully local way of life. It's what Bangor Savings Bank has been doing since 1852, investing in you, your business, and your community to help New England thrive. Bangor Savings Bank, where you and your local matter more. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
I'm up around Presque Isle, Maine. If you're looking for it, just take Interstate 95 north, all the way to the end, and turn left. Then, go an hour more. I'm here to meet with Richard Sillaboy.
Morning, Richard.
Big enough for what?
Richard is the vice chief of the Aroostook Band of Micmacs. He's also a master basket maker. We're inside his woodshop at his home.
This is in my shop. This here is the...
The Micmacs are indelibly linked to the art of basket making. It's difficult work. Intensive work. And, Richard demonstrates some of it over on the shaving horse for me.
Set on it. I'll take a piece of wood. Put it in here, pull the head down, and use it to shave the wood with. So, something we've always had in the house. We never had a workshop growing up. Mother used to make 10 dozen baskets a week and 10 dozen lodges.
Richard makes this look easy, but he's 74 years old. He's also had 15 heart attacks, 3 different pacemakers, and through it all, still cuts down and hauls out trees alone in the woods to make his baskets. The man's indestructible. But that's kind of what it takes. A strong will and an immense amount of effort to make something that, to most people, looks so simple.
But she sold large baskets like what the one behind me, 50 cents a piece.
And now how much would that basket?
I sell that for $150.
That's $150.
I'm trying to get back.
The baskets are made from brown ash tree. And in Maine, they're the least prized wood. Some even refer to it as a throwaway wood. But to the Micmacs, this tree and these baskets are core to their very identity as a tribal nation.
Do people always just want to see the baskets?
Yeah, lots of times. Lots of times they do.
I know what you're thinking. Please, let this be 20 minutes about basket making. I know, but that's not what brings us here. Throughout this podcast series, we've been talking about how the tribes of Maine signed away some of their sovereign powers in the 1980 Settlement Act. That is, except for the Micmacs, Richard's tribe. The Micmacs never signed on to the Settlement Act. But not putting pen to paper is only half the story. Because the real question is, were they better off not signing? Or was it an even worse fate for the Micmacs than the tribes who did? Sometimes the only worse thing than a bad deal is no deal at all. From the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies, this is Sovereign, a podcast about the fight for tribal autonomy in Maine. I'm Matthew Brown.
Now a message from our sponsor, Bangor Savings Bank. Bangor Savings Bank celebrates New England's local way of life every day. It's where we live, work, and play. With the personal service and heart of a local bank and the resources and technology of a much larger bank, Bangor Savings Bank works hard to fill the needs of your local community. Bangor Savings Bank, where you and your local matter more. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Now back to the show.
The Micmac Nation is represented in 30 different bands, and many of its people move freely between these different bands. The Aroostook Band of Micmacs are from, ready for this surprise, Aroostook County. They also happen to be the only band residing within the United States borders. All the rest are in Canada. The Micmacs have traditionally been a poor community. Many lived in tar paper shacks, uninsulated homes, in a place where winters can reach as low as negative 35 degrees. And they certainly could have used the millions of dollars from a federal settlement act. But here's why they didn't sign. It was sort of taken out of their hands. The Mi'kmaqs had been in this political alliance with another, more centralized tribe, the Maliseets. And most importantly, the Maliseets were the ones with lawyers. Around the time the 1980 Indian Claims Settlement Act was being negotiated, the bigger tribe, the Maliseets, decided to go it alone. First, they pushed the Mi'kmaq leaders out of the tribal council. Then, Richard says, they pushed out all the Mi'kmaq people.
This is what I was told. Jerry Pulcher's head secretary put all the names of both tribes on the blackboard. And it was the old Bowdoin Street School, so the blackboards were big as a wall. You know, and once all the names of the membership was put on that blackboard, I was told that he took an eraser and erased every name that didn't sound Maliseet, or that wasn't Maliseet. And when he got done, he says, "That's our membership."
Wow. And then what you're saying is literally erasing Mi'kmaqs.
Yeah. That's the story that I was told. And they created the whole band of Maliseets and separated from the Association of Aroostook Indians.
I'm sure the Maliseets tell a different story. Unfortunately, they didn't return my calls when I asked about it. So when the 1980 bill was signed, it was the Maliseets, the Penobscot, and the Passamaquoddy that made the deal. The Mi'kmaqs were never mentioned. They received no money. They received no land. They were erased. Every assistance program provided by the state prior to 1980, programs like fuel assistance to help with heating during those long Maine winters, were all abruptly ended. They were reestablished, but only for the three tribes recognized under the Settlement Act. I asked Richard about this time, how it felt to already have so little and get even less.
When you're living in poverty, you don't feel that. You don't feel it. No. The Great Depression didn't affect the Mi'kmaq.
It was already there.
They were living in poverty as it was. You know, and just barely getting by and scraping. You know, and it don't matter what happened to Wall Street or any place else. They just continue to get by and you scrape to get by.
Effectively, by not being included in the 1980 Settlement Act, the Mi'kmaqs ceased to exist in the eyes of both the United States government and the state of Maine. It's at this moment they face a question, whether to accept the legal reality, disband and walk away from the ash trees and 12,000 years of history, or whether to dig in, do the hard work, and make the legal case that they are in fact a tribal nation. The Mi'kmaqs were bent, but not broken. Because, as Richard says, they knew just the man who could help them win back their recognition. Although, this man was an outsider.
He really had his own way. I mean, he was very different and bold.
A Dutchman and anthropologist by the name of Harold Prince. Although, Richard says he didn't exactly act like your typical anthropologist.
The town of Presque Isle was digging a hole, doing some water main lines, you know. And we'd look out the window, we could see them doing that. And Harold says, come on. And I said, what? And he says, let's get down there and tell them that we found some native artifacts. And I'm not that bold, you know. So anyways, we did get down and take a look.
Harold is now a professor at Kansas State University. But lucky for me, he still lives on the Kennebec River in Maine.
Sir.
Harold.
Good.
We head up to his study where he has quite the collection of baskets.
Yeah, so that's a Mi'kmaq quill box. That's a Pequot box. This is a basket. This has the so-called potato stencil. These are both museum pieces. And that's a Maliseet basket there. And there's another splint basket there. It's all over the place.
Harold had worked in Argentina and Paraguay. So he was a little surprised when he got a call from this tribe called the Mi'kmaqs.
I'd never even heard of the Mi'kmaq Indians ever before moving. I had to look it up in the Encyclopedia Britannica.
There was no internet then.
No internet at the time. And I'm in the Netherlands. And they said, Mi'kmaq? I don't even know. I was a South American specialist.
So Harold set to work. His first task, get back the federal recognition the tribe had lost. Over the course of nearly a decade, Harold collected the tribe's history and its genealogy.
But it took quite a while. It took like certainly about three quarters of a year before there was a trust emerging.
And eventually, as everything in our series does, it all came down to land claims. The Mi'kmaqs do not have a reservation. I mean, it's not part of their culture, and they also span international borders. But to qualify for recognition, they needed one. So instead, Harold built the case around what's called joint use, a shared lands argument that previously worked for other tribes. While all this was happening, the state of Maine tried to get involved. Of course, they already knew the Mi'kmaqs had been left out and forgotten, and the state saw that the Mi'kmaqs were making progress on federal recognition. So the state offered a deal. Essentially, sign this paper, and we'll give you some of the things the other tribes have. But that would mean the Mi'kmaqs, like the other three tribes, would be under the state of Maine's control. So, did the Mi'kmaqs sign the deal? You might wonder. Nobody knows. Because, I kid you not, nobody really knows what happened to the documents.
Because the state of Maine could not find the signed papers for that. There was never a sign-off on.
So, okay, whoa. All right.
One of these moments, there's a whole bunch of them. They start saying, whoa, so the fact that it should have been ratified, right? I don't know whether it ever was, but they don't have a copy of it, right? I forgot exactly what exactly happened there.
You know what's so great, Harold? Yeah? Is everyone I talk to says, I don't know what happened to it.
That's the thing. And so these are these mysteries. And an old friend of mine, now almost 98, Penobscot Indian elder, Charles Shade, he would say the spirits were guiding. That's how I like to think of it. And we've had several times the spirits were guiding.
Either way, no signed documents exist. No documents, no deal. 2 years later, in 1991, the Mi'kmaqs gained federal recognition. They were officially a tribe again. They won the case. They even got their own name for the bill, the Aroostook Band of Mi'kmaq Settlement Act. Along with winning their federal sovereignty, the tribe was awarded $900,000 to buy more land. It was a moment 10 years in the making. I assumed that meant a parade through the streets of Presque Isle, banners hung from the rafters, and clouds that just rained down confetti and rainbows. Well, I was wrong. Completely wrong.
And a lot of the old-timers were concerned because when the money would come in, the fighting would begin.
No, I wasn't super happy. I mean, I was glad that we got it.
So that really went through my head that there was going to be a lot of turbulence now that they would suddenly be behind the driving wheel and mistakes would be made. So it was a great concern for their long-term well-being rather than jubilation about achievement.
Chilly, huh?
I'm taking a drive with the current chief of the Mi'kmaqs, Edward Peter Paul.
Let me turn around here.
He's showing me some of the investments the tribe's made in recent years.
So this is our health clinic right here.
Since their federal recognition in 1991, the Mi'kmaqs have built more tribal housing, put up a Boys and Girls Club, and even created a space for the first tribal dentist office.
This is our dental building. We don't have a dentist right now. Dentists are hard to find, but that's our dental.
But with more money, more jobs, Harold's prediction came true. There was fighting and a huge threat to their newfound sovereignty. Here's what happened. In 2001, the Mi'kmaqs fired three tribal employees. The employees filed a claim with the Maine Human Rights Committee alleging employment discrimination. It was later found that the Mi'kmaqs did nothing wrong. But when the tribe was defending themselves, they argued, hey, the state of Maine has no jurisdiction to even hear this case. We're sovereign. We only work directly with the federal government. Chief Peter Paul remembers this moment well.
You know, in hindsight, it was like, you know, one of the worst moves that we did, and we've had other similar things happen, and now we just there's fights we know we want to have, and then there's fights we don't want to have, so we try to avoid those.
But in this case, it was too late to avoid. The Micmacs found themselves in a state of Maine courtroom, with the state of Maine judge deciding whether or not the state of Maine had power over them. Not exactly a friendly audience. The case re-examined the language of the 1980 Settlement Act. Did it apply to the Micmacs? Even though they never signed on to it. Even though they're never mentioned by name?
What they said was, in lieu of that jurisdictional agreement, we are held to that 1980s agreement because of the phrase in there. It says, any and all Indians. Okay? So the state of Maine is essentially saying, hey guys, you know, this is what it says. So you fit this category, right? Any and all Indians.
The Micmacs lost the case. The Maine judges ruled that the 1980 Settlement Act covered the Aroostook Band of Micmacs, named or not. I want to stress here that this ruling only applies to state employment laws, not the tribe's full claim to sovereignty. But really, the loss implies it could all be thrown into question. The Micmacs suffered after not being a part of the act in 1980. They didn't get the money the other tribes received. They didn't get the land. They fought the whole idea of the Settlement Act for 30 years. And now, in this one instance, judges were saying, sorry, it applies to you no matter what. Talking with Chief Edward Peter Paul, he seems frustrated. And maybe rightfully so.
We don't want anything special from anybody. We want rights that are afforded Indians across the United States. We don't want anything more. We don't want anything less.
The struggles of the Micmacs in gaining sovereignty are in many ways similar to the struggles of all the tribes in Maine. It's tenuous and unrelenting. When I was talking to Richard in his basket workshop, I'd ask them about the relationship between the Micmacs and Maine.
In your mind, when you think of Maine, the state itself, the politics of it, the legislation of it all, like all of that combined, if you were to personify that in your brain, what does that look like?
It looks like a house with an adopted child. A household with an adopted child. You'll do as I say when I say. We can't get rid of you, but we will tell you what you can do and what you can't do.
Wow.
I asked Richard if he thought the Micmac tribe was better off not signing the Settlement Act back in 1980. And he said, yeah, he thought so. Richard and the rest of the tribe still firmly attest that they are sovereign, that they answer only to the federal government, that today, even with the recent court ruling, they are better off than the other tribes in Maine.
The state controls the other three tribes because it's locked into the 1980 Settlement Act. The Micmac Settlement Act don't have that. We go right from federal recognition from the federal government to the Micmacs. We don't have to deal with other entity in any way. But the state still tries to force, you know, its power over us.
And this one here, this room here, my nephew helped me build it.
You know, I wanted to share one more thing about what it takes to make a basket.
This here is the ash pounder that I had, that I bought.
It's this waist-high steel machine. And as Richard shows me, it, well, pounds the logs of ash wood.
It's a trip hammer.
The reason Micmac baskets are only made of brown ash wood is because it's the only tree that, when you pound it, every ring of the tree's history separates into all these different thin sheets of wood. And with those finer sheets of wood, folks like Richard weave the pieces back together to create something beautiful. Not signing the 1980 Settlement Act, or, well, being left out of it, made things more difficult, sure. But what the Micmacs were able to achieve in its aftermath is something all the other tribes of Maine are, to this day, still searching for. The power of sovereignty. In our next episode, the final one of our series, the Penobscot and the Passamaquoddy tribes fight back against a deal they now regret. Sovereign is a production of the Salt Institute for Documentary Studies. This episode was written and produced by me, Matthew Brown. Our series production team includes Sarah Esikoff, Sanam Skelly, and Serena Snyder. Our editor is the Robert Smith. Molly and Dana consulted on this project. This episode was mixed by Merritt Jacob. Our show art is by Haley Emmons. Isaac Kestenbaum is the director of SALT. Special thanks to Araminta Matthews at SALT and to Bunny McBride. And thanks to ISIS Madrid for life and driving assistance. Presque Isle is far away.
Isaac Kestenbaum here. I'm the director of SALT, and I just wanted to say that if you liked what you heard today and you want to make a podcast yourself, well, check out SALT. We offer graduate-level certificates in audio and podcasting, as well as short film, through a 15-week immersive semester up here in Maine. We also have a lot of online workshops that we offer year-round. So to learn more about any of this, just check out meca.edu/SALT. That's meca.edu/SALT. Also, I just want to say a very special thanks to Carly Peruccio for all the work that she did to help put this episode together. And another very special thanks to Merritt Jacob, because in addition to mixing this episode, he also did all the music that you heard.
This podcast was brought to you by Bangor Savings Bank. Bangor Savings Bank celebrates New England and its many locales. It's where we live, love, grow, and build. With the personal service and the heart of a local bank, but the resources and technology of a larger bank, Bangor Savings Bank fits the needs of your local community. Bangor Savings Bank. Local matters. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.